It's Friday, and that means it's another edition, number 46, of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. And we're always unscripted, but we're really unscripted because I had no idea until about 60 seconds ago what I wanted to start with. Because you and I were chatting just yesterday, and we were saying, you know, everybody who tunes in kind of likes what we're doing, but maybe we ought to mix it up a little bit.
All right.
So
I have no idea about this.
So no, you don't. So I was just driving in, and there was a news bulletin that President Trump has requested the Michigan state legislature to delegitimize the delegates. Those would be Democratic delegates in the state of Michigan, and for the legislature, and there is authority to do this, for the legislature to create its own board of electors to represent Michigan. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's asking the Republican legislature to decertify those electors, choose Republican electors, then to go to the state capitol and vote next month for him for president. This was always part of the strategy, but I think Donald Trump should give it up. I think that he does not have a legal case. I'm going to be very honest. I'm embarrassed whenever I see Rudy Giuliani, who I actually had done some work for when he was mayor of New York. But when I see him in the news these days as really a shell of the Rudy Giuliani who was America's mayor, and I think that somebody has to send the message to President Trump that we need to respect elections, that there may be, there always is a little bit here and a little bit there, but 5.5 million votes is the margin. Let's say it's maybe 5.42 million, that there are a few thousand votes here and there, but that Joe Biden is the president-elect and you ought to step aside. And I would say, not only because it's the right thing to do, but and not only because it makes the transition more smooth in a time of crisis, but maybe most importantly, personally, for his legacy. This may very well be the last thing that people remember, the guy who wouldn't give up. Mm. Of course, you agree with me, right?
Well, you talked about what should happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to step away from what should happen because I don't know what should happen. Mm. I really don't. What I do know is, I'm just thinking of the word fairness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this many times. You go back to 2016, and there was a clear winner, and Donald Trump was the elected president, and immediately, within a minute, there was the resistance. The resistance had formed. Not only was the resistance from the top down in the Democratic Party, but it was also in the major networks. And so there was a half of the country that, even though they didn't do what's going on now, they essentially did what's very similar to what's going on now. That is, they said he's not our legitimate president. He's a puppet of Putin. The Russians hacked our system. They hacked into our election system, and they placed in this guy. And it was day after day after day, and you know, we were down in D.C. when all of this was happening, and there were people close to us who were just livid and were kind of just mirroring what was going on in the media, the disgust, the anger, the rage. And we saw that, and that played out for 4 years. And so to me, it's no surprise that the same thing almost happens again. This time there's no talk of foreign intervention, but there's talk of massive voter fraud on the part of the Democrats. I've been trying to read up on this in both spheres, you know, the media, the mainstream media, and the what you could call, and I don't know, maybe this is a negative term, I don't know what to give it, but the alternative media. And there are just two different worlds of information right now. It is unbelievable that what you hear in the mainstream media, you don't hear in the alternative, and vice versa. What you hear in the alternative media, you don't hear in the mainstream. All I know...
They dismiss each other.
They dismiss each other. All I know is that we have essentially a repeat of 2016 in which one party is saying the other party isn't legitimate, and it really should not be any surprise. Because what came from 2016, I'm going to say objectively, was such hatred and such a dismissal. And really to say that our system was hacked by foreign rogue people, you know, whether it was Putin or hackers directed by Putin or whatever. I mean, that was undermining democracy. That was a serious blow to confidence in democracy. So we're seeing a very similar thing play out. And what we see as a result is almost what appears to be two nations drifting apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how can we say that in 2016, well, we didn't really hear it. Hey, Democrats, step down. How can we expect Trump and whoever follows him? You know, if you listen to the mainstream media, they say that, oh, well, that the Republicans are deserting him. And maybe probably some key people are, but obviously some key people aren't. So how do you react to that?
Well, I'm not going to counter the reality, but I am going to get into the moral and ethical aspects of how do we heal. So that what you say did happen, except for one very important thing. Barack Obama welcomed Donald Trump to the White House, smoothened the transition, as smooth as transitions can go. Michelle and Melania, none of them bonded, to be sure. None of them bonded. I mean, Donald and Melania didn't bond, even. But the two couples smoothed the transition. And very importantly, Hillary did not follow through, at least insofar as we know, on undermining the Electoral College. She conceded, okay? Now, from there, you could make the case that Mitch McConnell and Republicans set up every imaginable roadblock to Barack Obama when he became president. You can go back further to 2000 and say that Republicans that Al Gore stepped down when in reality, I suppose, he could have fought it even more. Bottom line is, how do we heal this nation? And does Donald Trump have a responsibility to take that first step? Even many of the Republicans around him are starting to get tired of this. Should he not just once and for all concede this election, let the process work itself out, come back and run again in 2024, or beat the hell out of the Democrats in 2022? But somebody's got to step down. I'm going to argue that Gore did, John McCain did, Mitt Romney did, John Kerry did, and Hillary Clinton did.
Yeah, I. It seems to be that we're at the point of no return.
That trouble you? Because it troubles me.
Well, you expand on it, and then I'll...
Why it troubles me?
Yeah.
So, we have a constitution.
Yeah.
And while it's old, as these things go, or if we talk in terms of historical epics, it's not that old after all. But, you know, it's 200 plus years old. And there's a Bill of Rights attached to it. That needs to be preserved and protected. But then there are structures and operational and legislative aspects, judicial aspects of the Constitution that perhaps need to be reviewed and tweaked. But what the Founding Fathers did as imperfect human beings is they at least created a structure and a system that has worked fairly well over the years, and they created a national community. And what I see happening, and it does trouble me, is the end of a national community. I hear talk sometimes from you and your brothers about secession. You know, some are liberal states like California, others are, you know, the mountain states, liberal and conservative. But the national community is built on rights. What happens if we no longer have a national community? Does that empower racists? Does that empower people who don't quite believe in other aspects of the Constitution? Does that empower them, or is the national community essential to who we are defined as a nation?
Well, I mean, it all ties together, right? We're talking about a lot of different things, but look, there was a narrative that was established very early on that Joe Biden was the presumptive winner. And to my knowledge, that's still the terminology that's being used. He's the presumptive winner. Really, the results are going to come in on December 14th. So what happens on December 14th is what happens on December 14th. There is a counter-narrative that emerged shortly after that initial narrative that was saying that there was massive voter fraud. You know, as an independent, and I truly am an independent, and, you know, I hate to say this, but you can look it up. I mean, that's public data. I'm not on the voter list. I haven't voted since 2012 because I haven't really believed in a candidate since 2012. I have no real skin in the game as a result. And so when I hear this counter narrative that there's massive voter fraud, now, if I voted for Biden, I wouldn't want to hear it. And if I voted for Trump, I would believe it. Well, I don't believe it, and I don't not want to hear it. I want to see evidence. And so if there's
evidence of your own vote.
Evidence of that of the counter narrative that there is massive voter fraud. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like I haven't really been presented with it yet, but if there is evidence and there's, you know, in the tradition of Roman law is as clear as day, well, yeah, I want to see it. And so, well, you know, whether that will emerge or not, I don't know. But to your other point about secession, you asked me, is it troubling that we may lose a national community? Well, yeah, it's especially troubling if it turns violent. Mm-hmm. But if you really have two parties that may not be able to live with each other, and, you know, as history has shown, there's the tyranny of the majority, where when one party gets in, sometimes this plays out. This hasn't always played out in the U.S., but it's played out throughout history. An agenda is rammed through. And I think we've got to a point in the last several elections where maybe it just can't work. I mean, if you had the Democrats saying that Trump was only in because of a hacking job, and they didn't believe in the legitimacy of his presidency, and now the same thing has happened and it's flipped, that looks to me like maybe an amicable divorce is around the corner. It's really only troubling to me if it goes violent, because I say this because this nation was founded on separation. One of our most sacred documents is the Declaration of Independence. The United States exists only because of that. Mm-hmm. So to say that it can never and should never happen again is kind of a logical fallacy.
I'm troubled by the tyranny of a minority, too. I mean, an essence of a democracy, if not a definition, is that people vote, and there's a winner, and if there's a winner, there has to be a loser. That goes with elections as well as legislation.
Mm-hmm.
One side has got to accept that the other won. Now, we do have built-in mechanisms, some very formal, some informal, of checks and balances. You know, in the U.S. Senate, there are all sorts of rules where a minority, even a minority of one, can prevent legislation.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, there has to be a gentleman's or an agreement between two sides that one side backs off. And what we're seeing here is actually no evidence. Not no evidence that has been presented, but no evidence of massive voter fraud. Does voter fraud exist? Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Did it happen on November 3rd or in counting of ballots? One has to assume that it did. Is it part of our history? You know, those of us who remember the election in 1960 know that when the voting machines jammed in eastern Texas, that was Lyndon Johnson. That allowed the Kennedy-Johnson ticket to win Texas. When Mayor Daley, the first Richard Daley, all of a sudden there were uncounted votes that emerged from nowhere. And then, you know, we obviously find out that a lot of those are dead people. Sure, that existed, and it turned an election. 118,000 vote difference among 65 million voters who cast votes, and it was those two states. There has since been.
Yeah.
But
well,
2000,
right?
2000?
The year 2000.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people think, and there were people who thought in 2004 as well.
I'm one of those.
Yeah.
2000 and 2004.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely am one of those. However, I also know that practically speaking, Al Gore concluded that he would not have been able to govern. There was no mandate. And that John Kerry concluded the same thing, that those votes, contrary to every poll and contrary to the vote counts during the day, those votes turned in Ohio. And polls are showing Kerry, exit polls showing Kerry leading in Ohio substantially and then ultimately losing Ohio. You know, I don't know. That's a whole other question about the reliability of some people's polls. But I think it's time for Donald Trump to give it up.
Yeah.
There's a larger interest than Donald Trump.
But, you know, if it were the flip side and the president won and it was clear.
Probably the same thing.
We know the same thing would have happened. So it really just depends on who you really want in office. And so if you want one guy in office, you're going to say, we want him, and the other guy needs to step down. But the nation is at a point where.
Yeah, but be fair here. Gore stepped down. Kerry stepped down. Hillary Clinton stepped down. The pattern is, and I'm sorry to make this appear to be partisan, but three Democrats did step down. Now, I'm not saying, oh, it's time then for a Republican, but I am saying 5.5 million votes separating the popular vote winner and the popular vote loser, that's pretty compelling. Pretty compelling.
Well, are you surprised by any of this?
No, but I'm troubled.
Yeah.
No, I'm not surprised. We were saying, how many times did you hear me say, I know we'll have a winner, I'm just not sure we'll have a loser in this election. And that's playing out. But I'm not proud that I'm right about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, your suggestion is for Trump to step down, and you believe that would be the best thing for the nation. But I just don't think 71 million people are going to be behind that. And so if that's the truth, if we could go back and forth on this, and we've already gone back and forth, you know, a good bit, but let's just assume he's not going to step down.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who voted for him are going to support him. What's next?
What's next is trouble, and we know that. So today, the CDC is issued a warning that there not be travel. Now, that's not a fatwa. That's not a mandate. That is a warning that with 1 million new cases this week and 1,800 people that died just yesterday, and the number of deaths, the trajectory is going up, that sad to say, but there should be zero traveling on Thanksgiving. That somehow this COVID-19 virus has got to be stopped and stemmed, at least stop the growth of it, if not turn it around enough until a vaccine is more widely disseminated. I say to a great degree we have to trust science on this. I think we have to trust science on a number of things, but on this, whether one likes the CDC or individuals in the CDC, these are people that know a whole lot more about epidemiology and immunization and immune systems, much more than you or I do. Mm-hmm. And so I say that we need to trust science. Are you skeptical?
Well, I'm skeptical of a moniker, trust science, because to say trust science means that there's a uniform understanding of what science is. It's to say that, well, because, you know, 6 out of 10 or 5 out of 10 agree, therefore that means truth.
What about 9.5 out of 10?
Well, I don't know what the number is, and maybe we should do a poll on that of scientists around the world.
We're available.
But what troubles me is the shutting out of debate. You know, I would never debate a scientist because I'm not a scientist. But I know that if I'm comfortable in an area and there's to be a debate, if I want to shut out debate or I want to avoid it, that's a pretty clear signal to me that somebody could be in the wrong. Mm. What I see happening is a similar phenomenon where there are credible voices that are offering alternate opinions, but they're just not heard of. They're either, you know, to use the new phrase now in social media, they're either doxed, mm-hmm. which means, you know, they're kind of made invisible on Twitter. They're not invited to debate on whether it's the nightly news or some of these news programs. And as a result, a lot of people don't know that there is a diversity of opinion in this realm of what, you know, what is science, what is to trust in science. You know, one example, and if you haven't heard it, you should definitely look it up, is the Great Barrington Declaration. Now, that's a group of epidemiologists and people within the medical health profession. I don't know how many doctors, maybe it's hundreds, maybe it's thousands, but they've all come and they've said that national lockdowns are do not work.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we talked about this a few episodes ago. I believe his name was David Nabarro,
mm-hmm.
special envoy to the WHO, who even said, in other words, this is something that we want to use as a last resort, not, you know, as your primary means of stopping the virus. And oh, by the way, it has very devastating effects, talking about national lockdowns. So what I would like to see is more debate, more discussion. Now, of course, somebody could say, look, in the time of a crisis, there's no room for debate. You shut it down. But then how do you really know what the truth is? So if there really are credible people, which there really are, that are raising all kinds of questions as to what the CDC may say, why can't we hear what they have to say? What's the problem? Isn't that a red flag? I mean, to me, that's a red flag.
I'm going to let you have the last word on that. I'm going to have the last word at this. Suppose there is a polling company that published its final poll the day before the election, showing that Joe Biden was leading by 5.6. And then Joe Biden apparently as of this moment is leading by 3.7. Would you say that that polling company did well?
Absolutely.
I would too. I agree. Okay. And this was another edition, and we ended on agreement. Okay.
Making progress.
Yeah. Have a good week.